Good evening, everybody. Let's start with our motivation. Again, appreciating the opportunity we have, especially living in a time when the Buddha has appeared on this earth and when he's taught the Dharma and when the lineage of teachings still exists and when there's Sangha communities around that can support us in our practice, when there's teachers who can teach us. So there's a lot of external conditions that enable us to practice. And there's internal ones too, especially having faith and interest in the Dharma. So let's appreciate those conditions and make good use of them. And remember that we have the conditions to practice the Dharma due to the kindness of other sentient beings. And thus, let's make our practice be for their benefit. And so to transform our mind through listening to teachings, so that we can actualize the path to awakening in our mind, generate the true cessations in our mind stream, and attain the non-abiding nirvana of the Buddha, where we have all the qualities necessary to be of the greatest benefit to sentient beings. And so for that reason, we're here to share the Dharma together this evening. So we've been preparing for Geshe Yeshe Tupke's teachings here at the Abbey by going through the text that he's going to teach ourselves. And the first four chapters have to do with overcoming the four distortions. So first chapter concerned overcoming the ignorance that sees impermanent things as permanent, and the second, overcoming the ignorance that sees things that are in the nature of dukkha or unsatisfactory in nature as pleasurable. And then the third chapter that we're on now overcomes the ignorance that sees things that are foul and unclean as clean and pure. Okay, so we just started the third chapter last time. Yeah. And it's, we have Joe Blow. Yeah, this is the Tibetan, the English translation for Kachik. Yeah, so one Kachik who says that you can really satisfy yourself through sense pleasure, and then you can practice Dharma later on. Yeah. And Arya Deva says, there's no way you're ever going to satisfy yourself through having sense pleasure. Okay? And he gave the example of the earthworm who, no matter how much earth he eats, he still has to eat more. You know? And so it is with us. We never reach any true satisfaction or fulfillment, no matter how much sense pleasure we gather around us. Okay, now the rest of the chapter here is going to go specifically into sense pleasure in the form of sexual intercourse and examining the object of our sexual desire. And in this text, since Aryadeva was a man, presumably straight, and was talking to a group of men, then he used the example of women's bodies. But since we're talking about it now and we're all women, we're going to use the example of men's bodies. Although whoever it is that you're sexually attractive to, it doesn't matter, this one or that one, you use that person's body, okay? And whatever we're saying here about the body of a person we're attracted to applies equally to our own body. So it's not that somebody else's body is filthy and ours is crystal clear and clean. Our body is, you know, similarly made from the same substances in the same manner and, you know, equally as filthy. So this really goes against our idea in the West that the body is beautiful and the body is this wonderful, gorgeous thing and that sexual intercourse is just the be-all and end-all of everything great. And, you know, it really contradicts this view that we have in modern society that produces so much desire and craving. Okay? So, Joe Blow says, well, the above disadvantages you talked about can stop somebody from desiring ordinary partners, but it can't stop desire for those whose appearance and behavior are exceptionally wonderful. Okay, so everything you said about, you know, not getting any satisfaction, you know, from ordinary pleasures, yeah, that applies to ordinary people, but if you have really this marvelous partner, you know, it doesn't apply. So Arya Devas says, I'm just going to say people, okay? So among all people, there is not the least difference in sexual intercourse. When others, too, enjoy their appearance, what use is this perfect person to you? Okay? So what he's saying is, what use is this perfect person with a wonderful appearance and wonderful behavior to you who lust for them? Arya Devas is quite direct. Feeling attraction is inappropriate because the unclean parts of all people stink. Okay, the body is filthy, and except to erroneous perception, there is not the least difference of good or bad regarding the sensation of intercourse with this cesspit-like dark filth. Okay, so if you have any doubt about what's inside your body or inside the person's body that you're really attracted to, he makes it very clear. Okay, the person's appearance can be enjoyed by others and even by dogs and crows, so it's unreasonable to feel particularly attracted by good looks. Okay, so what he's getting at here is, among all the people, you know, the Joe Blow's saying, well, you know, that applies to ordinary people. They're not so hot. But the really attractive ones, they're hot. And so it's suitable to lust after them. And Arya Devas saying, it doesn't matter, really, who you have sex with. It's all kind of the same. And Gyaltsebje, when he wrote his commentary, gave a few stories. These stories I understood, some of his stories I don't. But there was the husband of an ugly woman who said to her, you're ugly. You can tell what a great marriage they had. And so one day she put out his dinner for him, and she put some of the dinner in a beautiful china bowl and some in a clay pot. And the husband looked at it and said, what's the difference? And she said, there is no difference. So similarly, it doesn't matter who you have sex with, a beautiful woman or me, it's all the same. Okay. And then Gyaltsebje told another story about a man who saw somebody else, the wife of somebody else, and really lusted after her, and inquired about, you know, meeting her. So somebody set it up and said, you know, she's going to be in this very dark room waiting for you, but don't talk to her because, you know, she's a very proper woman and, you know, don't talk to her. So the man went and had sex with this woman. and it was actually his wife. But afterwards he said, it was the most marvelous thing I ever had. Nobody could ever be as good as this. Thinking that it was somebody else. Okay? So, in other words, just how foolish people are. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a beautiful person or an ugly person. It's just the same thing. Yeah. I wonder if like, dogs and cats see each other as beautiful. You know? And what about snails? You know? Do they see each other as beautiful? Wow, look at the antenna on that guy. You know? You know, I wonder if they differentiate between one snail and the other, or if they're all equally as good. Yeah? Okay. So that was verse 53. Then verse 50... Oh, and when he said, when others too enjoy her appearance, what use is this perfect woman to you? In ancient India, the women, you know, didn't go out so much, and often the marriages were arranged, and so you didn't know what your partner looked like until the marriage day. And when the woman came, she was veiled until after they were married. Okay, I guess so that he couldn't, you know, say, I don't want her, or something like this. But what Aryadeva's saying is that others, too, enjoy her appearance. So, you know, why are you clinging to her as only your perfect person? Yeah. And it's true, I mean, here people don't wear veils and they're public, and so, you know, to think that somebody is just your personal property for your personal pleasure is really out of place. And then verse 54, whoever sees her as appealing, or whoever sees this person as appealing, thinks they are satisfied with that person. Since even dogs and the like share this, why, fool, are you attracted? So Aryadeva is saying, why in the world are you attracted only to good-looking partners? If good-looking partners were the real cause of your desire, then desire would never arise towards other people who aren't good-looking. But desire can arise towards ugly people too. Okay? And it's confusion alone that caused desire. So when he's saying that desire can arise towards other people too, then Gelsab Jay is saying, yeah, Grandpa thinks Grandma's really hot, you know? Mm-hmm. And here Grandma is, you know, 70 or 80 and wrinkled and a few teeth remaining and, you know, bent over. But Grandpa thinks she's really gorgeous. And dogs and the like, you know, find their partners really great, you know? So, you know, would you ever really lust after a dog? I mean, why would we lust after somebody of our own species and not lust after somebody of another species? You know, if we're hot after bodies, you know, then why not, you know, a dog's body or something like that? And I remember one day when I lived in India, I was thinking about this verse, and I was circumambulating the library in Dharamsala thinking about this verse, and somebody had a sheep that they were circumambulating the library with, and I thought, you know, one sheep finds another sheep really sexy, and it was like, ugh, ugh, you know. And then I thought, one pig finds another pig really attractive. And then, you know, it really hit me that this mind that sees people that we find attractive is exactly like a pig's mind that looks at another pig and says, wow, aren't they good looking? You know, I want to have sex with them. It's the exact same mind. Yeah, there's absolutely no difference between lusting after some good-looking guy and lusting after a pig. Is there? You look like you're not sure. Do you think pigs are attractive?
I don't know what pigs are thinking about.
Well, there's something going on because they're attracted to each other and they produce piglets. You know? Yeah, so it's the exact same thing, you know? And often if we see other animals having sex, it's just like, ugh. I remember at one time in Dharamsala, there were two dogs that, you know, because there's all these dogs that run around, and they had sex in the middle of the bazaar, and then they couldn't separate. You know, they were stuck together, and all the men, not the women, but all the men were sitting there jeering at them and tossing things at them. And it's just like, you know, one dog finds another dog just indescribably attractive. But it's the same kind of mind, isn't it? There's absolutely no difference. And I think this is something we really have to get into this, you know, very stubborn head of ours that somehow justifies, you know. Yeah, oh, well, a pig's not so attractive, but, you know, this guy really is. It's the same, you know. The guy's body and a pig's body are made out of the same four elements. In fact, maybe the guy even ate the pig. Yeah? So maybe you are attracted to a reconstituted pig. You know? I mean, that's what it is. He ate the pig. You think this reconstituted pig is really attractive. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely the same kind of mind, no different. So we have to question it and ask ourselves, you know, what exactly am I attracted to here? Yeah. And I remember one time when we had a young woman at the Abbey. She was maybe 15, 16 years old. So she was really getting interested in guys. And who was it? Who was with me when we...
I was there.
Yeah, okay. So we were taking her into Coeur d'Alene, and we stopped at the park to have a picnic. And, of course, you know, we're trying to eat, and she's looking at all the guys playing baseball, you know? And I said to her, you know, someday those guys are going to be old men with wrinkles and gray hair and stooped over. And are they going to be so good looking then? And she looked at me like, you know, what are you saying? But she said, you know, she said, yeah, it's true. They're not going to be so great then. Yeah?
Well, it was really interesting because I think they were shooting baskets and all the guys were all buffed up with their shirts off and she couldn't even pay attention to what she was eating. Her venable
started. She says, "You're really ruining it for me." Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then, Joe Blow says, "A captivating partner is hard to find, and since finding one is remarkable, it's reasonable to desire them." Okay, so it's hard to find somebody, so therefore, it's quite reasonable when you find somebody to desire them. Okay, so Aryadeva says, "This person, every part of whom is lovely to you, was common to all before. Finding them is not as astonishing as it is for you." In other words, they were common to everybody before you met them, so how can you find what is common astonishing? Yeah. Everybody could see them. They were in plain sight. So what's the big deal? Okay, then Joe Blow says, "Although desire for attractive people in general is inappropriate," okay, "it is reasonable to be attracted to someone with good qualities. For example, somebody who's intelligent, somebody who's honest, you know, Buddha boy. Your perfect Buddha boy who's, you know, everything you looked at, who's going to support you in your Dharma practice, as well as support you emotionally, and, you know, just fantastic. Plus he's good looking, and he's rich, and, you know, and he agrees with all your ideas, and he brings you things. So it's appropriate to be attracted to somebody like that. Why not? Says Joe Blow or Joanna Blow. Okay. And Aryadeva says, if those with good qualities seem attractive and their opposite reverse, in other words, the ugly are unattractive, which is true, former or latter, for neither alone persists. So if those with good qualities seem attractive and their opposite, in other words, somebody who has bad qualities, somebody who's troublesome and complains and, you know, is disagreeable, if they're therefore unattractive, then which is true, okay? Because the attractive person who has the good qualities doesn't always display good qualities. And the person who you think is stupid or ridiculous, they don't always display those qualities either. Sometimes they have some good qualities. Okay? So in the same person, both faults and good qualities occur, one right after the other. And so when someone first has good qualities and later has faults, which one is true? Are they a person with good qualities or are they a person with faults? Okay? And so therefore, both desire for a person with good qualities and aversion to a person with bad qualities is inappropriate. Okay? Because nobody has all good or all bad. Yeah? And I think this is something really to think about, you know, because when you fall in love, all you do is see good qualities in somebody. Yeah? And then, as you get to know them and you start to live with them, then you start to see all these other things and you think that they've changed. You know, why aren't you the person that I fell in love with? You used to be so wonderful and this and that, and now you're, you know, really disagreeable. Actually, the person hasn't changed. It's just at the beginning, we were painting this fanciful picture. You know, there's Prince Charming, Buddha Boy, and, you know, who has no faults whatsoever. And our picture was totally exaggerated. Yeah, we were falling in love with a figment of our own imagination because nobody really is like that. Okay? So we can all see that in terms of looking in our past experiences. You know, like the people that you broke up with, yeah, that was really true with them, you know. I exaggerated their good qualities and then I saw their bad qualities and that's why we broke up. But then the new person you're attracted to, you forget and you say, but this one is different. This one really, oh, you know, not just the physical good looks, but he's really intelligent, really smart. You know, he knows the Dharma wonderfully. And, you know, everybody admires him. He's a very deep thinker. You know, everything I've always wanted. And now there he is. Yeah. Yeah. You know. But I'm not exaggerating. He really is like that. And that's what we think. Yeah. Or so whoever it is that you're attached to, you know, that you're attracted to, that's what happens. So verse 57, a fool's desire does not arise only for those with good qualities. How can reason prevent those involved in it without reason? Okay. So a fool's desire does not arise only for those with good qualities. A fool will have desire for anybody, whether they have good qualities or bad qualities. You know? Okay. So it doesn't follow that only someone with good qualities who conforms to our ideas of what we want is a cause for desire. You know, because we see that fools also desire those with faults. You know, because we look around and people that we think have tons of faults, other people just think that they're really great. You know, there's some guy who's shooting up drugs and, you know, stealing and big mouth, and somebody thinks he's really terrific. Yeah. So it's interesting. Why do we think that that person's a fool, but we're not? Yeah. It's the same mind of exaggeration, isn't it? So Aryadeva says, those who are full of lust and are shameless are not consistent, and reason doesn't influence them. So actually here, Aryadeva's using a lot of reason, but for a fool who has lust, just for whoever appears to them, you know, whoever appears to them as beautiful, even if it's somebody who has a lot of faults, okay, you can't even talk to that person about this because they can't understand it. You can't reason with them. Yeah. And it's true. I mean, we can see when we have friends who are in really bad relationships and dysfunctional relationships, and they're glued at the hip to somebody who's really not good for them, and we try and talk to them, they can't hear it. It's like in one ear and out the other. Or they say, yeah, yeah, what you say is true, but they don't think at it about it anymore and still remain attached to that person. Yeah? And we can see, boy, you know, they're really falling into a really difficult situation, but they can't hear it at all. So fools are beyond reason. Then verse 58, as long as she knows no other, she will remain with you. As with disease, you know, the other person should always be kept from opportunity. Okay, so here, yeah, what Joe Blow is saying first, that prompted this verse, is Joe Blow says, but women commit suicide when their husbands die. This was a common practice in ancient India, and even up until the present day. If a husband dies, the woman would often, you know, to show her loyalty, jump on the funeral pyre, you know, his funeral pyre. So, you know, Joe Blow's saying, oh, women commit suicide when their husbands die, but men aren't like that. Therefore, it's reasonable to form a relationship with a woman who desires you. Yeah. So you form a relationship with somebody who desires you, and then if something happens to you, they're going to kill themselves, and so nobody else will get them. Okay? She'll remain totally faithful to you. Yeah. Well, this is ancient. You're shaking your head, but this is really the ancient culture. And I think many people think that nowadays, too, you know. We're made in heaven, we're soulmates, this person's always going to be with me, so even if I die, they're not going to look at anybody else. Yeah, they're going to die and we'll go to heaven together, something like that. There was a movie that was made, I can't remember the name of it, but it was about a couple that, you know, they met in the 40s and, you know, the whole romantic thing, and then finally they got together and they married. And then they were old folks together in the old folks' home, and both of them going senile, and they decided to commit suicide together because that's how close they were. They didn't want to live without each other. So, yeah. Okay, so what this is saying is the other person does not desire only you. As long as they haven't experienced the taste of another person besides you that they're attracted to, they'll remain with you and be loving. But once they experience somebody else, they may even reject you. Okay. Therefore, like a bad disease, you know, don't trust the other person, and you've always got to prevent them from experiencing other people. Okay? So, means you have to take a person, lock them in a closet, so that they don't, you know, aren't attracted to anybody else. But, you know, you see this, don't you? You know? You see this, I mean, these sick cases we hear of them finding, I mean, in Ohio they found this, three young women who had been kidnapped by some guy. you know, 10 years ago. And then in Germany there was something, somebody did something and kept this young woman, you know, in a cellar below the house and had many children with her and, you know, wouldn't let anybody see her for many, many years. Yeah. I mean, very sick kind of thing. Yeah. Fault of attachment. Okay. Then Joe Blow says, social conventions recommend sensual indulgence during youth, so it is acceptable. Okay. So in ancient Indian society, the idea was when you're young, you have sense pleasure and you have a family and you have kids, and then you do your spiritual practice when you're older. Okay? And in America and in Western countries, people often think the same thing. You're young and so go and enjoy. Yeah, I mean, that's what TV is telling us, what all the movies are telling us. You're young and attractive, go out and enjoy. This is, you know, yeah, have as much sex as you can and, you know, really have a good time. Okay, so Aryadeva responds to that. In old age, one dislikes what one did in youth. So why would the liberated not be extremely saddened by it? So what he means here is it's inappropriate to act in according to social conventions, saying that you should go out and enjoy sense pleasure now, that because it's encouraging you to act improperly. Yeah, and you find this, you know, many, especially I think boys are encouraged to go out and really have a good time, and you know, boys will be boys and sow your wild oats and, you know, the whole thing. And so indulging when you're young is quite acceptable, okay? And Aryadeva's saying, don't go according to social conventions that cause you to act unwisely or improperly, okay? So if the passionate in their old age, despite not having attained liberation from desire, so they've had sex galore, there's, you know, when they were young, they're old now, they still haven't exhausted their desire. But when they look back upon what they did when they were young, they sometimes feel like, ugh, yeah, what did I do? Why did I act like that? You know, that was really foolish. So if they dislike even the memory of the bad things or the unwise things that they did during their youth, why wouldn't the arhats be saddened by seeing those with so much lustful behavior? You know, arhats would look at the, you know, what it's getting at, if we ourselves look at what we did when we were young to get sensual pleasure, and when we're old we look at it and we say, whoa, that wasn't very smart. I got into all these relationships that were really not very good, and I used people, and I had unprotected sex, and, you know, boy, what I did when I was young was really stupid. If you feel that way when you're older, then imagine how the liberated beings, you know, those who have gone beyond samsara, feel when they look at anybody having lust right now. Yeah, they would feel really sad, like, wow, this person has so much potential. You know, they can become a Buddha, they can practice so well, they can make their life so meaningful, and here they are, lusting after, you know, somebody else's filthy body. This is really sad. Yeah? Can you imagine? I mean, try it on for a minute. How would an arhat look at us when we're sitting there, or how would a Buddha, you know, regard us when we're sitting there going, wow, wow, wow. You know? I mean, here we are with a precious human life. We can make our life so meaningful. We can do so much. And there's another person whose body is basically a cesspool, and we just think that they're the hottest thing in town and want to crawl all over them. Yeah? I mean, an arhat or a Buddha is going to feel really sad looking at how foolish we are.
Maybe it's not exactly, but Mahatma Gandhi had in his biography a part when he had sex with his partner, his wife, and at the same moment it seemed like his father died.
Yeah.
From then on he promised not to be together with
him. Right, right. And I think this is a really good story, you know, that Mahatma Gandhi, when he was young, he was living in South Africa, and he was having sex with his wife at the exact time that it was his father or his mother, one of his parents, died. And when he realized that, he just felt like, oh, you know, this is like, here's somebody, you know, my parent, my father and mother died, and I was sitting there just enjoying myself. That's totally inappropriate, you know. And you know, so he remained celibate after that. And what I find very interesting is nowadays some people look at Gandhi and criticize him for that and saying, oh, he was just filled with guilt and, you know, I mean, I've read things where people have criticized him for having, you know, he's repressing his sexuality because he's filled with guilt. And, you know, he just overreacted to the situation. But I think it was actually quite an appropriate reaction and similar, you know, to how a liberated being would look at us when our, you know, when we're acting like that. Okay, so then Joe Blow says, since sexual pleasure is the best pleasure in the desire realm, it's appropriate to have a partner for that purpose. So he's not giving up easily. Okay. So Aryadeva says, those without desire have no pleasure, nor do those not foolish have it. How can there be pleasure for one whose mind constantly strays? Okay. So how can the pleasure of someone who desires another person and whose mind constantly strays from reality be the best desire or the best pleasure that there is in the world? You know, here's somebody, you know, who desires another person whose body is a cesspit and their mind is constantly straying from reality, and that is called pleasure. Aryadeva is saying, huh? Okay. So those without desire don't have pleasure focusing on desirable people. Okay. When you don't have desire, there can be a very attractive person there, and you don't feel any pleasure looking at them or touching them or anything like that. Okay. So those who are sensible don't have desire. Yeah. Aryadeva is saying only fools have desire. And as he made the point before, fools will have desire even for somebody who has many, many faults and many bad qualities. Yeah. And you can't even reason with these fools because they just say, yeah, 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 and then keep doing the same old thing. Okay, so that which is not pleasurable is thought of as pleasurable due to desire. Okay, so the cause of pleasure is desire. Another, you know, because he just said, if you don't have desire, that person doesn't give you any pleasure. Okay, so the cause of the pleasure is the desire. You know, and desire is caused by confusion that erroneously misconceives its object. Okay, so how does this desire, you know, the desire is based on confusion or ignorance, and how does this confusion misconceive its object? It thinks that something that is filthy is pure. Okay. And so Shantideva in chapter 8 of Bodhicharyavatara, Gayatri Bodhisattva's Way of Life, he goes into this in a lot of depth, you know, really asking us to mentally, in our meditation, dissect the person's body. And this is also done in the Theravada tradition, you know, and we did this. We studied this a few years back. Remember the 32 parts of the body, and we memorized them all. And we took out the anatomy books and looked at the mesentery and the intestines and the kidneys and everything else. And, you know, we're really asking, you know, what is it in somebody that is so attractive? Yeah, what in the world is it? Yeah. And I remember we were talking about, when it was talking about the fluids, we were talking about blood, you know. And when blood's inside of our body, we consider it us. But if we cut ourselves and the blood comes out, then it's no longer us. Yeah, it was very strange. It was like, what exactly is me and what isn't me, you know? Because it's on this side of the skin, it's me. On that side of the skin, it's not me. And also, on this side of the skin, oh, the blood is fine. We don't see it as disgusting. On the other side of the skin, many people faint when they see blood. Yeah, they find it completely putrid and frightening. Yeah. Okay. So that which is not pleasurable is thought of as pleasure due to desire. So the cause of pleasure is desire, and the desire is caused by the confusion that is misapprehending the nature of somebody's body. You know? And so it's really, really helpful in our meditation sessions to imagine the person we're attracted to, and then just peel back their skin. Yeah? Peel it back and look at what's underneath. And so we did this when we were doing the mindfulness of the body and really looking at, you know, what's inside the skin. And even our own body, which we consider so nice, so wonderful, so attractive, you know, peel it back, peel back the skin. And what do you have there? I mean, imagine if tomorrow everybody came to the stand-up meeting with their skin peeled back and you saw their facial tissues, you know, and the muscles on their faces and the, you know, and then the next day everybody came and not only was their skin peeled back, but the muscles and tissue was peeled back and we're all standing there as skeletons. Yeah? I mean, because when we're attracted to somebody, that's what we're attracted to. I mean, yeah, you look at somebody and you say, oh, so good looking. Well, what's inside, you know? Bones and tissues and blood and muscles. So that means you must find all of that stuff really, really gorgeous. You know? And so, you know, they say, what is it? Your eyes are like diamonds and your teeth are like pearls, you know? But then your kidneys are like... and your intestines are like...
the bridge.
You know? And your bladder. Oh, that bladder. What a great bladder. And look at that esophagus. Oh, I just want to hug that esophagus. You know, if you look at it, that's what's going on when we're attracted to somebody. Isn't it? That's what the nature of the body is. And so similarly, you know, our own body that we cling on to so desperately that we think is I or we think is mine, you know, why in the world are we clinging on to this thing? Yeah. If you look, every single orifice of our body produces something that's disgusting. Yeah. We don't have like compassionate nectar flowing from our bladder, you know, and we don't have any kind of beautiful, you know, jewels coming out of our anus. And, you know, even the earwax isn't something that's gorgeous, let alone the stuff in our eyes when we wake up in the morning. And, of course, when we vomit, that's nothing to write home about, is there? You know, and yet look how attached we are to this body. And everything that we look at, you know, like if you look at food, I find this incredibly interesting. You know, you look at food and there's this beautiful food, but as soon as our body touches it, we say it's dirty. Don't we? We have to wash our hands before we even touch the food. And as soon as the food touches our lips, it becomes dirty and we would never give it to somebody else. You know, kind of in a respectful way because it's become dirty. Yeah. So as soon as something touches our body, it becomes dirty. We eat it, you know, and this plate of food that looks so delicious, 5 minutes later, just after we chewed, if we vomited it all up, look at that cheesecake. Are you going to want to eat your own vomit? Or eat somebody else's vomit? I mean, look what our body did to that strawberry cheesecake. But it's true, isn't it? I mean, we're laughing and it is funny. But it's also true. It's very, very true. You know? And so, you know, this body makes everything kind of disgusting. Yeah? We eat this beautiful meal. Yeah? Like, I remember when the inauguration happened, you know, then they tell you what they all had for the inaugural lunch and everything. But they didn't tell you what it all looked like the next morning. Yeah? But we all know what it looked like the next morning. So, I mean, this is what our body does to things. So, you know, it really makes us ask ourselves, why am I so attached to this body? Why do I think it's so wonderful and fantastic? You know, our body, we have a precious human body because of our good karma. So we keep it clean, we keep it healthy. Yeah, because it's the basis on which we can practice the Dharma. If we don't have this precious human body, we can't practice. You know, it's very rare to get a body that you can use as the basis of Dharma practice. So we take care of it. But, you know, to think that it's like something wonderful that we've got to remain attached to at all costs and then desire somebody else's body, that's really misplaced. Don't you think? Yeah. Okay, then verse 61. You cannot have intercourse constantly with a person to match your attentiveness to them. Why keep them possessively with the thought they are mine and no one else's? Okay, so even if you make somebody else your own, you know, here's this person that's just really, you know, fantastic, you know, and you form a relationship and, you know, you marry them or whatever it is, then why are you possessive out of jealousy with the thought that they're yours and nobody else's? Okay? And Aryadeva says, you lustful person, you aren't capable of constant sexual intercourse with somebody to match your attentiveness towards them in the hope of enjoyment. In other words, you know, you pay so much attention to this person, yeah, and give them things and hang out with them and do all these things in the hope of, you know, having some sexual enjoyment from them. But you're incapable of having sex constantly to match the amount of attention that you give to that person. Yeah? And, you know, if you look, I mean, especially after you've lived in a monastery for a while, then when you're outside and you watch how people relate to each other, you can see how so much in society is just structured about getting sex. You know, how there's this whole big dance. You can see when people are attracted to each other, this whole dance that they do, you know, and talking about this and talking about that and going here and having fun and looking at this together and, you know, doing all these things, planning the future together, doing so much stuff. But it all boils down to sex. Yeah? Because if they couldn't have sex, they probably wouldn't be that interested in the person. Yeah. And I don't watch, what was it? Star Trek? Is that the name of the program? Yeah. Star Trek. But one time I watched it, and it was it was an interesting program because I don't know who it was, but, you know, two people on the ship fell in love, you know, a man and a woman fell in love. But then it was the woman who somehow, she got zapped because people were getting zapped. And then she came back, but she came back in another body, either of an alien or of a man or somebody else. The body was different. It wasn't this attractive woman's body. And then the guy didn't know how he felt towards her. You know? Because he had been saying all along, oh, but she's so intelligent, she's so this, she's so that. But then when she came back, maybe she even came back just as some kind of machine. I think, you know, her mind stream was in that machine. And then he didn't know how to relate. Do I feel sexually attracted to this machine? I don't think so. You know, but it's this person that I fell in love with who's now, you know, reborn looking like this. Interesting question, okay? And then Joe Blow says, conventionally desire is pleasurable, and since it doesn't occur without somebody else, you should desire somebody else. Okay, so desire is pleasurable, and since you can't have this pleasure and this desire without somebody else, you should desire somebody else. Yeah, because we were saying in the few verses before that the cause of pleasure is desire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so just desire someone. So, Aryadeva says, if desire were pleasurable, there would be no need for the other person. Pleasure is not regarded as something of which to get rid. Something to get rid of, in other words, okay? So if desire were pleasurable, then you wouldn't need another person to quell it, because pleasure isn't something that you get rid of. So if getting turned on by somebody else were really pleasurable, then you don't really need that person to have intercourse with, because pleasure isn't something that you would want to stop. But imagine that. Imagine being turned on with no end to it. Pretty uncomfortable, isn't it? It's a rather uncomfortable feeling. Yeah. Okay. So if desire were pleasurable, there would be no need for the other person, because you don't need somebody to quell your desire, because desire is really pleasurable. But that's not the case, is it? That's not what happens. Okay. So then Joe Blow says, but pleasure occurs through intercourse. And Aryadeva says, even in intercourse with another person, pleasure arises from other factors. What sensible person would say it is caused just by his lover? So Aryadeva is saying, if intercourse were a cause of pleasure, both those with and without desire should all experience pleasure, but they don't. Okay? You know, because Joe Blow just said pleasure occurs through intercourse. Well, if intercourse, by its very nature, were pleasurable, everybody should experience pleasure by having intercourse. That is not the case at all. If you're forced into intercourse, you don't experience pleasure. Yeah, even if your body reacts in some way, your mind certainly doesn't. And, so Aryadeva says, if intercourse were a cause of pleasure, both those with and without desire should all experience that pleasure, but they don't. And so people who respect their precepts, even if they aren't free from desire, would not feel pleasure but suffering if they were forced to have sex. So this is interesting. Those who respect their precepts, even if they aren't free from desire, yeah, would not feel pleasure but would feel suffering if they were forced to have sex, because they really respect their precepts and they wouldn't want to break their precepts. So the pleasure of intercourse is caused by other factors, you know, not just the desire. Okay? And it may be caused by the contact of the organs, but a big factor in it is the inappropriate attention. You know, the mind that has misapprehends the person and builds them up to be just this, you know, wildly wonderful being. Okay, that is the source of our pleasure. The foolish are infatuated, and the foolish who are infatuated don't value their freedom, but imagine happiness is to be bound to another person. Okay, so the foolish who are infatuated with sense pleasure, who don't value the freedom that their precious human life gives them to practice the Dharma, they imagine happiness is to be bound to this other person. And so they stay bound to this other person. Okay? You know, they form a relationship, they don't separate, or even they try to separate. They're back, you know, they're stuck in some way, stuck together, you know, with this person. Okay? The foolish who are infatuated don't value their freedom, but imagine happiness is to be bound to another person. Yeah. I remember, if I can bring up Singapore a little bit, talking to a few Singaporeans, they make, you know, you want to break up with somebody, but if your partner doesn't want to break up, then you don't break up. And then you finally make a date to break up. Yeah? I've seen this on more than one occasion. You know, because somehow you can see the foolish think happiness is to be bound to another person. So they don't want to break up. Yeah? Okay, oh, this verse. Oh, okay, we have to stop. We're over time. Maybe we can do one or two questions, and then the next verse is a good one. We'll start with that next week. Questions?
I just have a comment.
Uh-huh.
In this country, too, it's the same. All the social conventions are pointed to keep the relationship and stay together,
mm-hmm.
even if you're miserable, you know, but this is what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a thing of stay together even if you're miserable. But even if you separate, then find somebody else as soon as you can. You know, so if you can't, this relationship doesn't work, find another one. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. so for lay practitioners who are married and are raising children at this moment, this would be a very difficult teaching to hear.
Yes.
Like commitment and respectful relationship. Mm-hmm. For these kids who could become monastics, it would be very
Yeah. Well, okay, so you're saying so this kind of teaching would be very difficult for lay people who have a family with children to hear. And that's very true. And Aryadeva gave the teaching to monastics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't give this teaching to lay people. However, I mean, that wasn't his audience when he gave it. However, I still think it's valuable for lay people to hear this because, you know, you may be in a relationship and raising children, but then your mind starts to stray and look at other people. And like, you know, you have your husband or your wife or your partner, whoever, but look at that one over there, and look at that one over there. And the mind is always straying, you know. And that really damages a family tremendously and damages the children. So if a lay person hears this teaching and then, you know, at least reminds themselves when they're lusting after an extramarital partner that, you know, what in the world am I lusting after? Then it helps them actually to remain faithful to their partner and raise their children in a good situation. Yeah. So I think it can be valuable still.
Well, I wasn't questioning the value of it.
Saying that it's hard.
Even for a person who doesn't stray in her mind, uh-huh. and they're a devoted practitioner, and then they're looking at their partner like,
Yeah. Okay. So even somebody who's a very sincere practitioner hears this, and then they look at their partner and, you know, am I really supposed to see my husband, my wife, my partner, you know, like this? And, you know, I think, you know, what the thing is to use it to keep your mind from straying to other partners. Yeah. And even if you don't apply it to your own partner, do it like that so that at least you keep a good relationship. But then also do reflect that it does apply to your own body as well and to everybody else's body and still have the aspiration to be free from desire. It never hurts to aspire to be free from desire because we do see that desire causes unhappiness and desire causes problems.
But I also find it's a good practice for attachment because attachment, you know, mm-hmm. my wife, my children, my husband, and to be able to see that person like just as one person and not clean mind, and then if the person is away for a weekend, you're just sad all weekend because, you know,
yeah.
you have to learn to let go.
Right. Okay, so you're saying that this kind of teaching could actually help a married couple where the people are too attached to each other. And, you know, somebody else is away for a while and you can't stand it or you're really, really possessive, that this kind of teaching could help you just chill out a little bit and not be so jealous and possessive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking two things. One, Bhikkhu Bodhi, when he talked about this, he didn't apologize at all teaching this to lay people. He thought it was good for them. Mm-hmm. Because one, sometimes people need to control their
energy. Yep.
You know, even if you're Buddhist, you might want to on holy days and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my thought is that if you don't have a realistic expectation of what sexual energy and sexual relationships are about, and you just stick with what we were raised with in our culture, mm-hmm. there's a lot of dissatisfaction that you don't know how to place it.
Yeah.
And I think that you can be dissatisfied in relationships and in your family and all kinds of things, when actually it's just unrealistic expectations.
Right, okay. So you're saying that this teaching could also be very helpful for lay people because we are raised, you know, in our society with so much hype about sex and relationships, and all of that creates so many expectations, and then those expectations can't be fulfilled, which creates problems in the relationship and a lot of disillusionment and disappointment. Whereas if somebody had this kind of teaching and perspective, they wouldn't have such elaborately created unrealistic expectations, which, and lacking those expectations, then they wouldn't have so much tumult in their relationships. Yeah. And you can see it, you know, because we always talk about kind of people having middle age crisis and then going off and seeking another partner. Yeah. And if you had this kind of teaching and awareness of that, then you realize, what's the use? Yeah. Okay. So these teachings, you know, and especially in these first four chapters, they're very sobering. And sometimes we find them difficult to listen to because they're completely the opposite of our wrong conception mind. And we are so attached to our ignorance, and we're so imbued with our ignorance, that to hear the truth is like frightening, and we're like, wait a minute, you know. If this is really true, then I'm not sure I want to hear it, and how am I ever going to have any happiness? And that means that everything around me is totally depressing. And that's not the point of these teachings at all. The point is to help us shed attachment, because attachment makes us miserable. Yeah? And especially craving for life in samsara and being attached to other people in samsara and being attached to our own samsaric body, all of that makes us miserable. And so these teachings, you know, can really be very beneficial to keep us from being so miserable. And then to use our mental energy and our potential for something really that's much more worthwhile than, you know, lusting after something that cannot bring us what we want. You know, whether you're lusting after sex and thinking it's going to satisfy you, or whether you're attached to family members and think that being with them is always going to make you happy, or whether you're attached to your career and your reputation and you think that's always going to make you happy, none of that stuff is going to last. Yeah? And the more we can just accept the reality of the situation, the more peaceful we'll be inside. Yeah? So Aryadeva is not saying this, and the Buddha did not say this to make us depressed and unhappy. You know, it's quite the opposite. You know, it's to liberate us. Okay. So if you don't believe that that's the purpose, then just examine your own life and think about everybody you're attached to. And has that attachment brought you pleasure? Or think about everybody you've desired, and has that desire led you to anything, you know, that's going to bring you everlasting, peaceful contentment and joy? So just examine your own experience. You don't have to believe anything of this yourself. Just look at your own experience. So we'll dedicate.
May the spiritual teachings who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losong's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Guru Ratna Mandala Kamiryataya Me. Do
to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born of no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions and especially at Shravastiary in the West Florida.